The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover.
Today we have the authors of Two Night Owl from Dogfish, Holly Goldberg Sloan and Meg Wolitzer. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, now this book, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, but a little bit different than a lot of books I've read, because a lot of this book takes place over the internet. I mean, they're kids, they're girls, they're talking through instant message.
Well, it's an epistolary novel, and the novel is told exclusively in letters. In this case,
emails mostly. Some snail mail.
But the email, the modern version of letter writing, the whole book is that way.
Yeah, it's two girls who, in the beginning of the book, have never met, and they meet through emails, and we go back and forth, and we had a lot of fun doing that.
I think it's a good place to start by explaining the title.
Sure. Well, the girls, Avery and Bette, give themselves code names, and we'll probably get into a little bit why that becomes necessary, but the character of Avery, who I'm going to read a little from today, calls herself Night Owl because she can't sleep at night and she stays up kind of worrying about things, worrying about all kinds of things. Also, she's curious and sort of always alert, and she's Night Owl.
And the character of Bette is from California and she loves the ocean. She is a surfer. A dogfish is a shark. We have been going talking to kids, and one little boy asked me, is a dogfish a fish that has the head of a dog? And I wish I could say, yes, that was true. But a dogfish is a shark.
I would like to see that.
Me too. I love dogs so much that I can imagine dogs in every incarnation. So the title, Two Night Owl from Dogfish, is a way of explaining that the book is told through correspondence and that there are two people who have given themselves nicknames, one as a night owl and one as a dogfish.
Bette. Really Betty, I guess. Why Bette?
The character of Bette is named for her grandmother, and her grandmother is named Betty, and Betty is a decidedly old-fashioned name in many ways, and so Bette decides to shave off the Y and become Bette. She is a character who is somewhat bold and makes her own way in the world. So even though she was named after someone, as she says, I dropped the Y for obvious reasons.
I've talked to other authors, daughter, mother, friends that write a book. This is kind of a long-distance relationship here, just like Avery and Bette's fathers who are having a long-distance relationship. My guess is that Bette, Holly, came from you, and Meg, Avery, maybe from you. Am I totally off base there, or am I pretty close?
That was the start.
But, you know, one of the things that we basically decided and both agreed on is that every character would be inside both of us. So that while the first email was from Holly writing as Bette to me as Avery, later on we just went back and overrode each other and edited each other's stuff so that we would know every character in the book really well.
In a way, our book is a modern take on The Parent Trap. It's about kids who are looking at their parents and wondering about what will happen with their parents and if they will one day be a family. Maybe it's a good point right now for us to read the first email. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
The first email, the first letter in this book, is very similar to the way it was originally written. So much of the book is edited, but this stayed pretty close to the same. So in the beginning, it starts and it says, one day in early April, and then you begin. From Bette Devlin to Avery Bloom, subject, You Don't Know Me. You don't know me, but I'm writing you anyway. This could go into your spam. Maybe you're the kind of person who checks the spam. I don't. I found your email address online. You have a strange name. I never met anyone named Avery, but that made it easier to find you, so thank you for having that name. Also, thank you for going to a school that posts pictures of field trips and uses firstname.lastname at theshipfieldschool.org and gives students their own email. I don't go to that kind of school. So this is awkward, but I'm just going to say it. Your dad and my dad met 3 months ago in Chicago at a building expo, which was at the downtown Marriott. I'm not going to explain how I know, but they are now a couple. This isn't my business, only it is my business, because my dad wants to send me to a place called Siggy this summer. I never heard of Siggy. The website says, Challenge, Influence, Guide, Inspire. That was cut and pasted. Those words are how they got the name. Siggy is a summer camp in Michigan for inquisitive tweens and teens ages 10 to 15. You could be bored reading this email, but guess what? You are supposed to go to Siggy too. I'm not going. It doesn't matter what my dad says. But maybe if you won't go to Siggy either, it'll stop him from trying to force me to go. That's what I'm writing about. Bette Devlin.
From Avery Bloom to Bette Devlin, subject, re, you don't know me. I think you are confused and have the wrong person. If my papa was in a relationship with your dad, there is a 100% chance I would know about it. We're very close, and it's been just the two of us almost my whole life, so we're best friends, and he tells me everything. As for my school, it's helpful to have your own email, so you can write to a teacher in the middle of the day to ask about a project. Ms. Pickering sometimes responds in 5 minutes. No one from outside my school community or family has ever found my email address before and written to me. The school might need to upgrade their privacy and security settings. I will post a note online. About Siggy, my friend Callie Workman's older sister went there last summer. I am signed up for the 8-week session. It's kind of a creative nerd camp. At Siggy, you take classes called Bookin' Around and Exotic Robotic, and you also do archaeology searches for real fossils in Dig This. Plus, they have microwave popcorn at night for shut-eye cinema, where they show a foreign movie before bed, and everyone talks about it together looking for themes. The best part is they don't force you to do sports. I'm not athletic, and also I hate to swim. I have some excessive worries. Eating expired foods, getting a disease, etc. But drowning is the biggest one. You will never have to go to Siggy. I'm the only one of us going there. Avery A. Bloom. P.S. I'm 12, and I live in New York City. My papa is an architect. Even though you sent your email to the wrong person, I'm curious. How old are you, and where exactly are you writing from?
There you go. Just a little taste.
Well, I think you can see from the very first two letters that these are two girls from very different places in life. They are destined to become friends. Meg and I met 5 years ago at a writer's conference.
Yeah, I mean, I looked across the room and saw Holly smiling at me, and I knew her work and really liked it. And
this was in Chicago.
We were giggling within minutes, really, and we haven't stopped.
We have so many things in common. We're born 9 months apart.
We're both married to writers.
We both have two sons.
We have mothers who are artists.
And we both have fathers who are psychologists.
It's a lot. We have the same cultural, you know, points of reference. So much. We know friends in common.
Both of us have, which is unusual at our age, parents who are still alive. So my mother is 90. My father is 87.
Yeah, and my parents are 89.
Our parents even have similarities,
yeah,
with where they are in life. My mother is blind, and she has been for quite some time. I was in theater as a child. I even wrote a book about it called Short, and Meg, I know you were too.
Mm-hmm.
The first major theater experience I had was in the play The Miracle Worker, and I played Helen. And the woman who ran the program, she asked me to go spend time at a school for people who were vision impaired, and I did. And I learned to do sign language. I look back on that now and realize how much that influenced my life. The idea that we all have differences, and we all face challenges, and the ability to overcome them is what makes us bigger people.
There's a lot about differences in the book, really. The character of Avery is Caucasian and Jewish and lives in New York City.
And the character of Bette is African-American, and she lives in Venice by the beach.
And also the fathers are single gay men raising their daughters alone. It's not an issue book at all. We're just trying to show this family, and it's an inclusive book, certainly.
We certainly also believe that families come in all forms and shapes and sizes, and what bonds them is the connection they have to each other and the love they show for each other and the respect they show for their differences.
I think in a book like this where you start off with two characters who want nothing to do with each other, to me it's very enticing because you know that that direction is going to go toward closeness. And will it stay there? Well, I don't want to give it too much away, but I loved writing that trajectory from people who really have differences, you know, to sort of see how they have something in common.
Here's the other thing we really like. We both consider ourselves, Meg has spent more of her career as a writer writing adult novels. She wrote The Wife, which is right now in contention for the Oscars for in the category of lead actress. Glenn Close plays the title character, The Wife. And she wrote The Interestings, and which takes place at a summer camp.
Yes, but an obsession of mine.
All of our work, I would say the hallmark of our work, besides exploring themes of identity and friendship and family and what that all means, is that we like to make people laugh.
Yeah, humor is really important to both of us. And I have never thought, and I think Holly agrees, that humor in fiction or in film is like insert joke here, because then it feels shoehorned in. I think it has to arise very, very naturally. And in this book, Holly would send me an email in the voice of Bette, and there were just these things that cracked me up. And I don't even know now, like, I have favorite lines. I don't even remember who wrote them anymore.
The thing is, we're out in the world traveling. We're going, I think it ends up being 15 cities. Our biggest joy in life is to make each other laugh. So today when we were on stage, you said something. I haven't said anything to you. We were talking about our parents and how they influenced us growing up. And you were referencing your mother, who's a well-known writer. And you said this was back in the day when she didn't get a lot of support to have a career because of the times. And I said something to the effect of, these were the olden times. And you said, she didn't have a butter churn.
Right.
And I had to churn away. The kids were all there. I don't even know if any of the kids knew what a butter churn was. But I was trying not to laugh. We did have one event where I couldn't stop laughing.
Oh, that was terrible.
It was terrible.
Well, it was great, too, because...
But what was I even laughing about? Oh, the chair was...
The chair.
I'm going to start doing it again.
The chair,
I have to not do that.
Creeping back.
The chair kept turning.
Circle. Holly was swiveling.
I'd be talking to the kids, and then I would just turn around. I think the floor was uneven, or maybe it was just that we've been answering so many questions.
They can see what our relationship is like.
Yes. It's hard for us to speak without answering each other's questions. Maybe you can see that.
Well, yeah, you know, I almost can see that. You brought up a couple of interesting things, and I'm sure that the listeners would love to know as much as I would. Your mother, a writer, who is she? You're both married to writers. Who are they? You might as well give them a plug.
Well, my mother is named Hilma Wolitzer, and she is a novelist and short story writer, and she started publishing in the 1960s when I was a little child. She sold her first short story in 1966 to the old Saturday Evening Post, which some of your listeners may remember, and it was a fantastic story, and she was home without a car with two young kids. My dad took the one car, so to give you a sense of her mindset at the time, her first short story was called Today a Woman Went Mad in the Supermarket. And Holly, you should really read it. It's fantastic.
I just recently met Meg's mother and father for the first time when we were in New York, and they were everything I thought they would be and more. They are
amazing
people, and I know that when I look at you, I have to credit them for being interesting people. My husband is a writer named Gary Rosen, and he has written for film and television. He last season worked on a TNT show called The Librarians with Noah Wiley, but he's written for many television shows, 21 Jump Street, 90210, and he's a film director. He did a movie called Hacks, and I am the first woman to direct a live-action film for the Walt Disney Company. I'm very proud of that. It was called The Big Green. Meg is also a teacher. She's taught at Princeton and many different places. She's taught writing. When we go to schools, I can tell at certain times when you're speaking and you start talking about writing that you teach writing.
Oh, really?
I can tell because I don't know those things when you talk about character.
It's something I think about a lot because I've been teaching my husband who teaches as well.
And tell them his name. Because
his name is Richard Panek, P-A-N-E-K. I know because otherwise it sounds like it's Panic, which, you know, in his childhood, of course, was the bane of his existence. Don't panic. But he is a nonfiction writer, and he often writes about science, but not exclusively.
And he has a book coming out. He has a new book.
Yes, he has a wonderful book coming out called The Trouble with Gravity, and it's coming out in July, and I really highly recommend it. It's about how we don't know what gravity is, but nobody knows that nobody knows. Like, you don't know that scientists don't know this. Did you know that?
I find gravity so interesting because the idea we're constantly being pushed down by something that we're strange. Yes.
It's this force, but scientists don't understand it. And his book is meant for a general audience, and it's really fantastic. And it's like going to be historical, cultural. He writes about all kinds of things, and he teaches at Johns Hopkins right now. And it's so great, I think, for both of us to have a writer in the house so you can run things by.
We have similar sorts of lives, which are for other people, quite unusual. So it'd be quite unusual to have two people who are both in the same place, their home, because we don't have offices. Our offices are in our homes. And we get up in the morning, and 7 days a week, we are both in pursuit of something, putting these words down, forming sentences, and trying to get paid for it. That's our pursuit.
And whoever has a project takes precedence over everything else. He, when he was finishing his book, was just sort of working around the clock. And I was just sort of self-sufficient, you know, because we love to sort of watch British television at night. And he still will do that. He still would do that. But he would work all day. And the workday could go very, very late because the office is in the home. But I don't know if you and Gary are like this, but Richard and I, during the day, we never do anything together, and we don't even talk to each other. We don't have lunch together. We've joked that we're kind of like people in a law firm. You walk past each other and don't say hello 100 times a day. Are you like that?
No, we're not like that.
We have lunch together?
We have lunch together almost every day. Oh. We go somewhere, or do you think that we're more talkative than you and Richard?
You might be, because we're in a small New York apartment.
And we're in a big,
true. That's a different thing.
And also, we have so much access to the outdoors, so we try to walk.
Yeah.
We like to walk somewhere during the day.
I walk a lot, but I do it by myself around New York City. But, you know, it's so funny, because we're talking about our differences, and that's so much like Bette and Avery. Tonight Owl from Dogfish.
It's
really like that.
It's really true. My whole idea, I guess, about the book is the notion that you can have a great friend that you don't even... We have seen each other in the last 2 years. We wrote a book together. So for the last 2 years, a big part of our life has been working on our book, writing the book. And in the last 2 years, we have seen each other in a physical sense, being in the same room, maybe 4 times.
Yeah.
Because we live far apart, and you wrote a book called The Female Persuasion, and you had a lot of travel with that, and you were on book tour with that, and I was doing a television movie during that time, and yet somehow we stay very connected. And I know for people, my mother particularly having issues with her vision, there are many ways to stay in touch with people. It doesn't necessarily have to be that they're in the same room.
No, not at all.
All right, now you two wrote together to Night Owl from Dogfish. I know that you have some workings in film, screenplay writing. How different is writing a screenplay and getting that all the way through to a movie as opposed to maybe a book?
I'm going to say it's very different, and yet it's very similar. What's interesting is that we are writing the screenplay right now for this book. So we were really fortunate. It was optioned. Do you want to tell them about who took our book?
Sure. We are working with the Weitz brothers, who did About a Boy and all kinds of wonderful films. And
they have a company called Depth of Field. With their close friend and collaborator, Andrew Miano. And they have done Ants and big comedies like American Pie.
They do a lot of different things, which really drew us to them. And I like their sensibility.
And they're directors also. So besides,
we're doing this in concert with an interesting company called Macro, whose mandate is to make films that include people of color on screen.
And to make films particularly that emphasize difference. That was started by a man named Charles King. We chose them, so we had multiple people interested in our book and multiple people making offers on our book, and we decided to go with a company that wanted to make entertainment that had differences, and we decided to go with filmmakers who had made films we admire. So yeah. We're right now writing a screenplay.
And it's a different experience. I have done some screen work, but I'm mostly, as you heard, a novelist. It's interesting because in the case of this adaptation, it's different from most adaptations because the novel is in emails, is epistolary. A lot of the time it was a challenge for us because we were talking about things that already happened. They weren't happening in real time. A character would have to say, remember today when this thing happened at the zip line, whereas it's so liberating in the screenplay, we show the thing happening at the zip line, and it's quite wonderful to be able to have action happening in real time.
It's, in my opinion, easier to adapt your own work. You know the story, and in this case, it's easier than writing it. We were writing something, as Meg just said, where everything happened in past tense, everything you were writing about. And when we convert it to film, one of the big questions, actually, we were asked by producers is, how do you plan on doing it? Are you going to do a film where there's lots of voiceover and we still hear their voices talking to each other? And no, that's not what we did.
We kind of bookended it with some voiceover, but then we could really go into the action. So it was a lot of fun. We're still working on it even as we speak, but
we're getting ready
to turn in our first draft.
Yeah. The process of making a film is the same as the process of launching an ocean liner or building a skyscraper. There are so many people involved and there's so much money. So if you write
Not that we're getting so much money. You mean that it's so much money
involved.
No,
the process involved, in making it. So yeah. you can write a screenplay, and that doesn't take 100 people every day on a standing next to you. And you can publish a novel, but that's usually you and your editor or your publisher. But when you make a movie, it is such a collaboration. It takes so many people to realize it, and it's very expensive. So it doesn't just happen. It wouldn't be the same as when we write something and have the luxury of being able to have it published. So everything has to align. I tell people to get a movie made. Basically, it's like winning the lottery, meaning you need to have 5 or 6 numbers and they need to line up. And so your first number that you got that's a winning number is the material. And the next number is people that want to finance the material. And the next number is people who want to star in the material. And the next number is the director. And the final number is when you go out and make the material. That's how you won. And by winning, you just got the product made. Then there's a whole other set that has to do with releasing
it. With my novel, The Wife, it took 14 years to get it made.
Yes.
And so sometimes it's heavy lifting. I'm hoping that doesn't happen with us.
I'm hoping that doesn't happen too.
I don't think I can handle
but
that.
But I think there's also, you write in a very topical way, and maybe this book has some of that in it, where what we do tries to speak to the times. In your book, The Wife, it's possible that the movie came out.
Was ahead of its time.
Yeah, it was ahead of its time. I know initially when they were trying to get the movie made, they had trouble casting the husband
to the wife. Yeah, sure, because back then it was hard to get a man who was willing to play a kind of a narcissist and a jerk. Not only that, but in a movie called The Wife. So he had to sort of be wounded by having second billing in a way, and also have to behave in ways that the audience wouldn't necessarily like him.
Not necessarily as heroic as most movie stars want to be.
We got the most wonderful actor, Jonathan Pryce.
Oh, he's so good. I love him so much in the movie.
Yeah, he deserves a lot of attention.
He does. He does.
To Night Owl from Dogfish, a collaboration. What's next? Do you have another idea maybe for another book getting together? Or what's next for each of you?
We don't know. I mean, right now we're doing the adaptation to screen, so we are still working together. But we will retreat to what we
are.
Yeah,
we have our own projects where we, I don't know, can we still write books by ourselves? Have we lost the ability? Time will tell. No, we each have other projects that we're doing. I have an adult novel and another novel for middle grade readers.
And I have another middle grade book. We publish through Penguin Random House for young readers, and Meg publishes, her imprint is Dutton, and my imprint is Dial. And this is the first time you will see a book that has on the spine Dial/Dutton. Yeah. We were able to,
they both have their names
because our editors happen to be the publisher of both of those imprints. So
yeah, it's a unique experience. You know, sure, it's possible down the line we might revisit this. We're having a good time.
And I think my publisher is named Lori Hornick. And
mine is Julie Strauss-Gable.
And they were so supportive of us doing something that is somewhat unusual to writers working together. And maybe that collaboration will end up being something that other people will do. I don't know.
Oh, that would be great.
We tell kids at school, you should try to tell a story, pick a friend, and write to the friend, and see where it takes you. It's a little bit like improv. You don't need to plan it. Write them and present something and see how they answer you.
Well, if I wanted more information about Two Night Owl from Dogfish, if I want, Holly, more information about you and your books, Meg, you and your books, I'm sure you each have a website.
Sure, I have a website, megwolitzer.com, and that's megwolitzer.com.
And my website is hollygoldbergsloan.com. There's information about my books on that site, and a few stories about myself, my childhood, also there.
And, you know, the cool thing was, Angels in the Outfield, one of my favorite movies. Holly, you wrote the screenplay for that.
I did write the screenplay for that. I'm proud of that movie. I had a wonderful time working on it. Bill Deere directed it, and I wrote it. I directed some of the second unit, and I was one of the producers, associate producer on it. And I was fortunate at that time to work with some people who have wonderful careers today. Matthew McConaughey was one of the baseball players. He's won an Academy Award, and Adrian Brody was one of the baseball players, and he won the Academy Award, and Brenda Fricker's in it, and she's won an Oscar. Danny Glover's in it, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the little boy. Today, he is a wonderful actor and also now directing. It was just a great group of people. And when you do a sports movie, I've done several sports movies. When you do a sports movie, you have teams. And when you make a movie, you have a team. And it was when you can function in a way that is mirroring what you're doing, a team that's trying to win, it can become a joyous experience. And it really, I have pictures of myself in major league stadiums, sitting in the outfield. I've got a phone to my ear. I'm wearing a jersey. And it was somewhat unusual to be a woman doing that. They sent me to baseball camp, to training camp. I went to Arizona, and I was with the players. I love sports. I have sons. It was a good fit for me.
And you had a little angel right on your shoulder. And Meg, do you have some awards hopefully coming up yourself?
Well, Sunday night is the Academy Awards, and I feel very, very lucky to have had a great actress like Glenn Close play.
And she already did win.
She's won, she won the SAG Award and the Golden Globe for this part in this film that was based on my novel. So, and was nominated for a BAFTA, which is the British Academy Award, basically. Yeah, so win or lose, it's been a tremendous experience to see this really terrific performer really get to understand and know the character that I invented.
Well, this has been Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt. We've been talking with Holly Goldberg Sloan and Meg Wolitzer, author of their brand new book, Two Night Owl from Dogfish. And with any luck soon, we'll be watching it on the big screen. Ladies, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.